DaddyLife.net Podcast Episode 5. Welcome to DaddyLife.net. Here we will encourage, equip, and challenge men to be the leaders of their families, the lovers of their wives, and the examples to their children. We'll also provide some detailed advice on internet and technology safety. Hello everyone and welcome back. My name is Hank Osborne, and today we're going to focus on social media. What is social media? Well, the best way to define it is to talk about the tools that enable us to participate in a social experience on the internet. Those tools today are predominantly Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and the latest addition is Google+. MySpace is kind of hanging in the lurches right now. Recently, I've heard that there were some investors that got involved with investing somewhere upwards of tens of millions of dollars to try and revive MySpace. And I believe Justin Timberlake is involved in that in some way. But MySpace is really kind of focused more on the younger crowd and also in more of the music and entertainment industry. But let's talk more about what I'd consider to be the mainstream social media tools. Facebook, in my experience at least, tends to gear more towards personal, family, and close friend type interaction. That's the way I use it. In our house, my wife and I use it a little bit differently. I'm a little bit more open at accepting friend requests from people that are from my past, like say high school, or say from Wyoming. I lived in Wyoming for 8 years, and there's people out there that I haven't seen in at least 15 years because I left Wyoming in 1995. So I use Facebook to connect with some of those people that I haven't seen in a lot of years. My wife's a little more protective, and she generally doesn't accept Facebook friend requests from anyone that she hasn't had a relationship with personally, interactively outside of the internet within the recent years. There's some friends that she has reconnected with since high school, but that doesn't go back quite as far as it does for me because there is about a 9.5 year age difference between my wife and I. So, like I said, just a little bit difference in how we use it. My wife doesn't use Twitter at all. I do. I use Twitter. I actually have a couple of accounts. My main Twitter account is The Oz with two Z's. That's T-H-E-O-Z-Z. And that one is much broader. I follow a lot more people. A lot more people follow me. And I don't get into as intimate of conversations as I do on my Daddy Life Twitter account. That's Daddy_Life. There's a link to it from the DaddyLife.net webpage. I use the Daddy Life Twitter account to connect with other dads and moms to help promote the DaddyLife.net website and also to interact with people on the same subject matter that I'm actually tweeting on and also blogging and podcasting on. LinkedIn is much more of a professional network where people put out their like an online resume. There's rules around LinkedIn that require you to use like a real picture of yourself. You can't use an animated picture or any kind of graphic that is not a picture of a human being. Google Plus is very new. It just came out of beta and I think is still only accessible via an invite, and I actually do have a bunch of invites, so if you're interested in getting a Google Plus account and you don't have one yet, just connect with me via Twitter or email me at hank@daddylife.net, and I'll be glad to send you a Google Plus invite. I'd love to connect with you that way. Google Plus, I'm liking it. I'm not completely sold on Google Plus yet. There's a lot of people out there right now that are very skeptical about Google Plus because they've built tools before and the tools have gone away. I think one was called Wave, Buzz is another one that Google still actually they have Buzz, but they're not pushing it as much as they were. So Google Plus is neat. It's got some neat features, but jury's still out for me on it. Historically, I've been involved in some other, I guess you would call them social media sites. LiveJournal is one. I've actually abandoned LiveJournal. I've abandoned Classmates.com, which is a way you could connect with people that you went to school with. JC Faith was a Facebook or MySpace-like site for Christians. I abandoned that one. It didn't really go anywhere. And I guess you could go all the way back and we could talk about the old BBS, the bulletin board systems. They were really, in my opinion, the first social media sites where people came together based on some kind of common connection. Usually it was the bulletin board operator, but I won't go into the details on that because it's harder to explain now for people who've never heard of it than it is to probably just send you a link via the show notes that'll be posted on daddylife.net so that you can go read about it on Wikipedia or wherever I can find a link for it. But I will post a link for historical BBS system just so you can read about it and see what it's about if you've never heard of it. Now the thing is, these social media sites and these tools, they're all interconnected via iPhones, web browsers on laptops and desktops, Droids, iPads, other Android tablets, Blackberries, you name it. They're even connected via non-smartphones using SMS or text messaging. The way to connect with your friends, your real friends that you know personally face-to-face, and your online friends is really endless in terms of technology. And how many people are actually using this stuff? I know I said MySpace is kind of lurching in the shadows there, trying to figure out if it's going to make it or not, but MySpace actually has a statistic out there that says 61% of all teenagers have a personal profile on social networking sites. You know, almost two out of every three teenagers are using a social network. And what is really surprising, in my opinion, is that there are a number of parents that are not friends with their kids on Facebook or MySpace. And worse yet, there's actually some that I've met personally and interacted with who didn't even know that their kids had a Facebook or MySpace account. How it got to that, I don't know. Maybe it was a family situation where the kid is in a home that's been broken apart by divorce, and maybe one parent allows it and the other parent doesn't. Or maybe they got on it on a school computer or via a library computer or a friend's house. Who knows? There's no telling how they get it, but the only thing that's really preventing a kid from getting a Facebook account is their honesty. I mean, even kids under the age that the rules say that you have to be. For instance, Facebook's terms of use say that you will not use Facebook if you are under 13. I like to tweak that and say you will not use Facebook if you say you are under 13, because the only thing keeping you from actually registering as a 10-year-old, if you have access to the internet, is just by answering the question, are you over 13 or not? And they can simply lie and say yes. So that rule is only as good as the person is honest who's signing up for it. So why are these things dangerous? Why are we concerned about security on social networking? Well, I've had experience with parents who have kids who are involved in social networking that get off into things that are really disturbing. I won't get into specifics because I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I mean, there's some things that really, really are concerning in terms of the language and the activities that they're discussing, whether it's sex-related or drug-related. It is just really disturbing, and I've seen some of the behind-the-scenes chat information between teens on MySpace in particular, and it is, like I said, it can be really disturbing. And once again, there are parents out there who don't even know that their kids are using this, much less the parents are are not even monitoring their kids because either they don't know or they don't know how to monitor their kids on these sites. So, and this like I said, can be dangerous because these sites can be used for social engineering. By design, they're built in a way so that you can share information about yourself. And the more information you share about yourself, the more vulnerable you become to social engineering. What is social engineering? Social engineering is a way for people who have interest in getting information from you. It's the way that they manipulate you to get the information. Social engineering, for instance, could be used to glean insider information about a corporation. Someone might, in a casual setting in a bar, who's interested in corporate espionage, they might befriend someone that they know is employed by a company that they seek to get information from. Have some drinks, have some casual conversation that has nothing to do with work. Maybe they would get off into just having some fun, telling some jokes, and before you know it, they're into that conversation that goes something like this. Hey, I'm a software engineer. What do you do? And the next thing you know, the person's spilling the beans about their company, giving all kinds of information on who's who within the company, how the company operates, how the security systems in the company operates. And before you know it, the person who is doing the social engineering, or the hacker, or the criminal who's trying to gain access or knowledge about the company, they've gathered the information they need in order to exploit a vulnerability within the security system of that company just by sitting around having casual conversation with an employee. Now, how does this work on social networking sites? Well, I'm going to try my best here to give you, in the audio version, a description of the anatomy of what is called a spear phishing attack. And first, I guess, let me tell you what a spear phishing attack is versus a phishing attack or spam. What we traditionally hear in terms of email or even social media sites is called spam. And what that is just getting unsolicited advertisements or solicitations for things. It could be things like pharmaceuticals, vacations, or how to win an iPad, or it could be someone in South Africa has died and they have left $14 million to a trust fund that they named you as the recipient of, or maybe they need someone in the United States to manage this trust, but they don't know anyone, but they were given your name by a friend. You've seen those emails. You've seen all those. Those are generally, historically at least, they have been spam or phishing emails. That's where someone is sending out a lot of the exact same message. They're casting a wide net, and they're trying to just get how many ever people they can to respond, and then they will engage in some kind of dialogue with you to try and get you to either send them money, or maybe they can sell you something that is not what it's advertised to be. Now, spear phishing is different. Spear phishing is much more targeted, just as the name implies. Spear phishing is where, say, a hacker would build a website that looks exactly like your bank's website. So maybe their site looks exactly like Bank of America on the face, and it's very easy to do this, by the way. Very easy to duplicate the look and feel of a website. And it's also very easy to disguise the website address to make it look like it could actually be Bank of America's website. I won't go into details here in how that's done, but just trust me, it can be done. So once the hacker builds themselves a website on their own server that looks like Bank of America, they craft an email and they send it to people that they somehow know are Bank of America customers, or maybe they suspect you are. In this email, they will tell you maybe that there has been some problem with your account. If you would please click on this link here and go to your account at Bank of America and correct this discrepancy with your account. Maybe it's a low balance alert, or maybe it's something that's more appealing, like you've won a prize, you know, log in to verify that this account is still valid so that you can receive your prize. But what they're after there is when you actually go to their website, if you do click the link within the email and you land on this hacker's website, you think you're on the Bank of America website because it looks exactly like the Bank of America website. You enter in your user ID and your password and you click login. What the hacker does is they build the site so that when you click login, their web server will record your username and password, and it will store it on the hacker's web server, and then the page will redirect you to the real Bank of America website, to their login error page, so that you will end up on a page that says, oops, you mistyped your username or your password, please try again. So you enter your username and password again because you're on the real Bank of America website. And when you click log in, it actually does log you into the real Bank of America website. So in that process, all that has happened is that the hacker has gained your real username and password. So once the hacker is ready to use this information, they can log into your account. If you have the ability to do electronic payments, maybe they'll send a payment to themselves or do a wire transfer or whatever they're able to do with the features that are on your bank account. That's just one example. So spear phishing is a way to target specific individuals for specific data, like usernames and passwords for specific sites. Like I said, spear meaning targeted. It's a very targeted attack. This can be done using email. It can be done using Twitter, Facebook, Google+, or LinkedIn, or any of these sites where someone can send you a link and ask you to click on something where you either have to enter a user ID and password, or maybe the site just loads some spyware or malware onto your local computer, which may capture keystrokes and send those keystrokes back to a hacker so that they can use that information later. Like I said, there's a number of things that can be done there. But that's one of the reasons why social networking is so dangerous. Let's just say you own your Facebook page and you have a fairly broad audience like I do. I have my Facebook page, I have more people than just people that I know personally face to face. I have, you know, like I said, historical friends and old high school friends and friends of friends that I may have met only via introduction online. Well, if maybe I got on there and I started complaining about my bank one day, or maybe I mentioned that I'm at Five Guys Burgers eating a double cheeseburger and order of fries and sharing it with my friend Sam over here. Well, when people do things like that, they leave clues for hackers or people or criminals to let them know the types of things they're involved in. Maybe someone will tweet or put on their Facebook status, just stopped by Bank of America and could not believe the line in that place. Or, man, the service really stinks in this bank. I hate going in there on Fridays when it's payday. So it's just those little innocent comments, along with your age, your city you live in, your spouse's name, your children's names. It's all those things that add up that makes these sites dangerous in terms of empowering criminals. Now, how does it play with your children? Well, think of it this way. In today's world, there are a lot of resources online and a lot of resources that you don't even realize are out there and sharing information about you and your neighbors that can empower a criminal to have the information they need in order to enter into a conversation with your child to trick them into doing something that they may not otherwise do because they're not convinced that this stranger is who they say they are. Let me give you an example. Let's just say that, you know, someone watches your habits on Facebook and they know that you work to a certain point every day, that maybe you work to 5 o'clock, your wife works to 5:30. So your kids get out of school at 2:30 or 3 o'clock. So there's a range of a couple of hours where your kids are at home. Well, let's say that a criminal looks at your Facebook status, they realize where you live, and they go to your local county tax website. Let's just say they just put your name and your city in there. you can put in the name of the person and search for the name in the county that we live in, and it will pull you up a map of the neighborhood. It will tell you the address that I live at, how much taxes I paid last year, the square footage of my home, my neighbors' names, who we bought our homes from. Then you can go over to the page that talks about property tax on cars. You can see what kind of cars I drive, which, oh, by the way, they can tell by looking in the driveway whether you're home or not. If the two cars listed on the website that we pay taxes on every year, if neither of those are in the driveway or in the garage, if they peek through the window, then they know that neither of the residents of the home is actually there at the time. Therefore, they can, I'm just using this as an example, but let's just say the person knocked on the door and a child answered the door, and they could say, "Hey, I'm the brother of your neighbor, Mr. Jones, down the street, and he's having a heart attack," or I don't know. They could come up with some outlandish story to try and get your child to open the door to let them in to make a phone call. And the next thing you know, it turns into a very dangerous situation for your child because a person has gleaned information about you, about your neighborhood, about your home, about your neighbors, and they have used that information to convince your child that they have a relationship with you or your neighbor that they really don't have, simply based on information that they found on a social networking site. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of an insight on why social networking sites can be dangerous. Once again, they're tools, and if they're used properly and safely, no more dangerous than, I like to compare everything to driving a car. As a private pilot, you know, people make fun of you and go, "Man, you're flying those crazy little dangerous airplanes. I'd never do that." Well, you've heard the old story. The most dangerous thing about flying in a small airplane is your drive to and from the airport. And it's kind of the same way with online social networking sites, in my opinion. Your drive to and from work is probably way more dangerous than what you're dealing with social networking sites, but it doesn't mean you should act irresponsibly with them. So just be careful, be diligent with how you use social networking. If your kids are allowed to use MySpace or Facebook or Twitter or any of the other sites out there, make sure that you have access to their account. And I'm not talking just being their friend. Facebook is an example. I don't know if it's changed. I noticed that there is absolutely no way to record your chat sessions. So your children could be having very inappropriate chat conversations, private chat conversations on Facebook, and you would have no way to go in and check it, even if you went in after they went to bed and logged into their account and watched it. The way to combat this is require your children to use these tools in a public place in the home. In other words, where you can at any time walk up and shoulder surf and watch what they're doing. My wife and I in our home, we are completely open with passwords and with access to social media, email, and things of that nature. Anything as far as our personal email accounts, our social networking, our cell phones, our text messaging, whatever. I mean, we are completely open with it. She can answer my phone. She can answer my text message. She can read my text message. She can log into my email, even send email as me. We just have a very open sharing relationship with that because we want to demonstrate that level of trust that we have between each other. We want to demonstrate it and have that same relationship with our children because we don't want there to be this big secrecy and privacy thing within the home. Think very carefully about how you're going to deal with email and social networking sites because the information shared on there can turn into a dangerous circumstance for your kids if it gets into the wrong hands and the people know how to use it in order to manipulate a relationship with your children to either gain financial or other access to your family that you would not otherwise want someone to have. I encourage you to go to daddylife.net and look at the show notes, which will link you to some of the things I've talked about in this episode. I encourage you also to leave comments and tell me how you're dealing with social networking in your home. Are you allowing your kids to use social networking? If so, what are you allowing them to use, and what are your rules on how and where they can use that? I would also love to hear from you via voicemail. You can leave a voicemail for me at 864-372-9833. That's 864-372-9833. Leave a voicemail and I can add your voicemail to the show. And you can there, you can leave comments or questions or encouragement or advice of your own for how parents should deal with these things. I look forward to hearing it and sharing it with the folks in future episodes. Once again, check out the show notes, and I look forward to having you back here next week. We're trying to keep this a regular show that is produced every Thursday evening and put out onto the website no later than Friday evening. So that's the plan for the frequency of this show, and I hope it suits you, and I hope it's often enough and useful information, and I look forward to having you back with me next week. Have a blessed day.